Hey, what's going on? Thanks for listening to the MMA Podcast, December 9th. As always, a ton to break down this past weekend. Demetrius Johnson defended his belt for the 9th time, tying George St. Pierre for second of all time behind Anderson Silva at 10. Going to talk a little bit about that card. And of course, this weekend, there's actually a UFC fight night going down right now in Albany, New York. I think one of the prelims, a fight pass card headlined by Derek Lewis and Shamil... Shamil Abdurakhimov, and of course tomorrow UFC 206 big card interim featherweight championship between Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis, Cerrone Brown, Swanson Choi, Kenny Gastelum. Gonna break all that down and the weekend news. Let's do it.
Listening to the MMA Podcast!
That's right, Lenny Hart. It is the MMA Podcast. It is December 9th, the MMA Podcast 191. We're slowly catching up to the UFC, who's doing number 206 this weekend at the Air Canada Centre in Toronto, Ontario. Usual host P Money at Sweet Pappy Jones, feeling a little under the weather tonight, so we actually have a familiar voice. If you've listened to the show for a while, he hasn't been on with us for a while. He is he is mentioned in that little outro song we play by Mystery Deja. It's been I guess a couple of years now. You got to put the E before the L because the Jew is back. Ross Finkelstein, what's going on, dude?
Did you miss me? Because I missed me.
I missed you.
I missed
even
me.
Though I mean, I mean, I can't honestly say I've missed you because you know we've been buds and spoken many a times between your last podcast appearance and now. But the people,
I was going to say,
if you missed me right now,
we'd have a problem.
The former host of the Final Round podcast, a former regular on both the MMA podcast and the now defunct MMA Roundtable, a podcast we may bring back someday in the future, or we might not, who knows, we might never bring that fucking podcast back, but the MMA podcast is rolling strong, we are an out-of-control beer truck going downhill, we cannot be stopped, number 191 tonight. And yeah, like I mentioned, a ton of stuff to break down. And anything new with you since the last time you've been on? You got that sex change, which was good. Yes, anything else?
You know, keeping on top of things. You know, got into a lot of gambling, heavy gambling.
That's right.
I'm in prostitution now.
That's right, yeah. Thus the sex change, so you can make more money, yeah. Yeah. A lucrative market, the tranny prostitution sex market. What a weird side road to go down before breaking down UFC. let's get to that tough finale, huh? Yeah, we had The Ultimate Fighter. I think this was season 24. Actually, I did watch a couple episodes. And look, I'm not going to pretend like this season of Tough is going to resurrect the series. It's looking like, especially with new ownership, The Ultimate Fighter might be in its death throes. We might not see much more of this show, but, you know, I did see a couple episodes. It was semi-entertaining. I like the idea of it. You know, you have a flyweight division that Mighty Mouse has beaten everyone in that weight class and beaten some people multiple times. No real new challengers. So, hey, let's bring in 16 champs of, you know, RFA, Titan. I think the winner, Tim Elliott, was the Titan champ, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, you have 16 champs at 125, bring them all in, sign them to a UFC deal, and the winner of Tough gets an immediate crack at Mighty Mouse, which, interesting premise. We'll talk about the actual title fight and Tim Elliott's performance in a little bit. But, yeah, before we, I guess, break the card down briefly, because there were a few fun fights, but a lot of them weren't really exactly featured fights. But, yeah, did you watch any of this season of Tough Flyweights?
You know, I watched a little bit of it. As far as quality of fights, this probably was the best season yet, but
a lot of finishes considering, you know,
yeah,
flyweights.
Yeah, well, you generally have more exciting action when you throw, I find, lighter weights in there. I mean, heavyweight action, you're going to get action for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, and then it's going to slow down for the rest of the fight. But if you have lighter weights in there, and the lighter you go, the longer they'll last and the more exciting it'll be because their gas tanks are significantly greater than a heavyweight. But as far as the fights this season, the fights were great. I just couldn't get into the show. And it's because the entire concept of The Ultimate Fighter to me is dead. It's run its course no matter what you do. You could bring in past talent. You could do another comeback season. It doesn't matter what you try and do. It's a stale concept. It's time to kill The Ultimate Fighter. It's time to find something new. And that's with any show. Any show, once a show runs its course, once it runs for 10 plus years sometimes, there are shows that run for 20 years and they run their course. There's shows that run for 10 years. There's shows that run for 5 years. And The Ultimate Fighter has been on since 2005. It's time for it to go. I mean, we're going to have it on for 12 years and we're going to have 25 seasons. That's a little much. It's definitely time to go. The fights were good, but that's what's going to happen when you put guys that are quote-unquote champions in the flyweight division from all around the world. I mean, these are the top guys outside the UFC. So if you have the top guys outside the UFC fighting, you're going to have great fights. As far as the story goes, there's no story there. And this is as much sport as it is, it's entertainment too, especially in this aspect. I mean, I love preaching about how it's always, this is entertainment over sport. But this, more than anything, shows that I mean, a TV show like The Ultimate Fighter, it's entertainment-based with a little bit of sport aspect, but it's a reality show. And when there's no story there, there's no entertaining storyline or any entertaining purpose for watching the show, there's no point.
Yeah, and you actually bring up a good point I hadn't really thought about, but yeah, it's not necessarily Tough that's getting stale, but it's the idea of, oh, let's get a bunch of people and throw them in a house and give them as much booze as they want in a swimming pool and put cameras, everywhere and have a full-time, 24/7 crew walking around filming all of it. That's a very 05 real world type show where now, I don't think the real world is still around. It's a format that's been fun. And, the first one gained them a ton of fans. You know, it's been, I think, overall Tough has been a success for the UFC, but no show that's good runs for 25 seasons. I mean, come on. Yeah, and looking at the card itself, actually a lot of fun fights. Ryan Hall frustrates Gray Maynard to a unanimous decision. The favorite Kaelin Curran lost to Jamie Moyle, 30-27 across the board. Dong Young Kim 2, as I've seen a lot of people call him, beating Brendan O'Reilly 29-28 across the board. Rob Font beats Matt Schnell. Nice KO. I think he got a no, he did not get a performance of the night there. Brendan Moreno, Sarah McMahon winning their fights. Jared Cannonier. If you go back and watch any fight aside from the main event or co-main event, watch this one. And I guess we'll save the top three for its own discussion. But yeah, what did you think of those fights leading up to the big three fights on that card?
There were some interesting fights here. I thought the Matt Schnell Rob Font fight from the get-go was a mismatch. I thought it was going to end like that. I did not like the matchup. And then sure enough, Schnell goes out there and gets knocked out pretty brutally too. That was not exactly a pretty finish. Ryan Hall, Gray Maynard, man, Gray Maynard, hang it up. It's time. I mean, Ryan Hall is going to be a tough guy to market because he's going to win a lot of fights, but no one's going to want to watch him fight. I mean, dropping down to the ground over and over and over and over and over again is not going to win you any fans. I mean, sure, there's a niche for that, and that's grappling, and that's, I mean, Submission Underground 2 this weekend. Shout out Chael Sonnen. Shout out Flow Grappling.
Yeah,
Flow Sports.
Jones versus Dan. That's going to be a good matchup.
That's going to be fantastic, and I can't wait for that. But that's its own thing. That's not what the UFC is, and no one's going to want to watch a Ryan Hall fight. The light heavyweight fight. What's his name? Jared Cannonier. Jake, I can't hear you if you're speaking.
Oop! Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, I think it's Cannonier or Cannonier. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce the I E R at the end there.
Well, forget how you pronounce it because we're going to throw it out the window. He's officially the Terminator now because this, first of all, if there's any kids listening, any kids who want to be MMA fighters or want to box, kickbox, take punches to the face, which you should never want to take punches to the face, but want to be involved in any of this, don't watch this fight and don't ever do that. Coming forward, just walking forward towards a guy with your hands down and just asking him to punch you in the face and then literally taking his punches to the face and like turning with them but eating them, that's not safe. Brain damage isn't fun. CTE is not fun. That's but that's a scary dude. I mean, he shows no fear, and against a really 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 solid prospect in Kudalaba. So props to him.
Yeah, that was an exciting fight. The fight afterwards was exciting, not for the same reasons, but Jorge Masvidal was just pouring it on Jake Ellenberger before Jake's foot, I guess, got caught in the little crease between the actual canvas and mat flooring and the bottom of the cage. I've never seen it happen like that, but I guess his toe either broke or was dislocated or something, and as Jake is sort of trapped there with his foot stuck in the cage, the ref came and waved it off as a TKO, which, you know, even if it had gone to the judges, I think it would have been a 10-9 win for Masvidal. I think even though, you know, Jake only got four minutes to fight, barring some crazy comeback, he was losing that fight and losing it pretty convincingly. So I don't really have that much of a problem with Jake taking a loss and Masvidal taking a win. And Cerrone, even though he's fighting on Saturday, already saying he would like a fight against Masvidal next, perhaps in Denver on January 28th. Would you like, you know, first, tell us what you thought about the fight, but second, do you like Cerrone Masvidal next for Game Bread?
Well, that fight was awful. Like, to end like that, that's a terrible way to win a fight. That's a terrible way to lose a fight. They were fighting in the small cage. They were using the smaller cage for this event because this was at the Palms, and the Palms is a much smaller venue, so they got to use the small cage. But to have a gap, I mean, that's just some crappy design to have a gap in
Bush
between.
Bush League shit.
Yeah, like that's something you'd see in some random regional amateur promotion. But to see that in what is essentially the NFL of MMA, the Major League Baseball of MMA, the biggest league in the world for mixed martial arts, to see that in the UFC, to see something so amateur like that is ridiculous, and that should not end fights, and that should never be a problem.
As the kids like to say, not a good look.
Not a good look in any way, shape, or form. As far as Masvidal, before I get to that, I do think Masvidal would have won this fight anyway, but still a terrible way to lose a fight, terrible way to win a fight. Now, as far as Masvidal versus Cerrone goes, if Cerrone beats Matt Brown tomorrow, which is a tough fight, and who knows what could happen there, but if he beats him tomorrow, that's a fun fight, and of course they have to make that fight. I'm surprised we haven't seen it already, because those are two guys that will literally fight anybody in either division. And
yeah, and both were at 55 just a year or two ago.
Yeah, and they're incredibly active, both of them. They fight all the time. They both have a ton of fights. Cerrone's the most active fighter in the UFC, but Masvidal's up there too. So that'd be a fun fight. I don't know who'd win. I'd lean Cerrone, but Masvidal's a tough fight for anybody. No one's going to finish Jorge Masvidal. It's just not going to happen. And if you look at his losses, all of them are close split decision losses. So that's a tough fight. That's a tough fight for anybody.
I think I'd go Cerrone just because he has more tools in the old tool belt. But that's not to say that Masvidal is not qualified to pull off a win either. That would be a real fun fight. Moving up the ladder, the co-main event, Joseph Benavidez and Henry Cejudo, the two coaches on Tough 24, fighting one another. Kind of a bizarre fight in the sense that the first round was a rare 9-9 round. Henry Cejudo winning the round, but getting a point taken away for repeated low blows. Henry takes the first round 9-9. On my scorecard, I had Benavidez winning rounds 2 and 3, earning him a 29-27. Only one judge, at least to me, had a score that made any sense. One judge scored all three rounds to Cejudo. One judge scored all three rounds to Benavidez, and then the final judge scoring the first two, Cejudo, in rounds 2 and 3 to Joe B. This would have been a great five-round fight. You know, I think these are guys who are obviously both top five. And if there's any fighter in the world who you can point at in his division and say he is the undeniable number two, it's probably Joe. Cause in his, you know, entire career, he's only lost to two different guys. He's lost to Dominic Cruz at bantamweight and Demetrius Johnson, the champion at flyweight. Cejudo, younger than both Joe and Johnson, probably the future of the weight class. But for now, Joe locks in that two spot. I guess we'll talk in a little bit what's next for Mighty Mouse as far as, you know, who he will get next. But I was a little surprised to see Cejudo win that first round against the veteran Benavidez. But I think cardio played a big role in the fight. And in the second and third round, Joe took over. Didn't win the second and third round by a mollywhopping necessarily. But he did what he needed to do to win the fight, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Henry Cejudo because we've seen way worse point deductions, and I don't think he should have been. I don't think he should have lost a point in the first round for a low blow. I mean, it was clearly accidental. He's not trying to kick him in the nuts.
I do too, and I thought it was an accident. But on the flip side, you know, I'm tired of seeing a lot of fighters fight with the John Jones mentality of, well, you know, I'll cheat until I get a warning, and then I won't cheat. You know, whether this didn't seem as big of a deal as like an eye poke, but He did get a warning after the first one, and I don't know. It was right on the line for me, but personally, I didn't have any problem with it. I think that was Eves Levine reffing that one, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think he should have lost a point, but at the same time, Henry Cejudo's a whiny bitch, so it's okay. now, that brings me to my next point. I don't think he should have lost the fight, but it's okay because Henry Cejudo's a whiny bitch.
Damn, hot take.
I scored the first round for Henry Cejudo, but, you know, nut shot takes that away, and it's an even round. I scored the second round very close. All these rounds were close, but the second round
was the closest, I think. Yeah,
second round was very, very close. In the second round, I scored for Cejudo. The third round, I scored for Benavidez. So, in my eyes, it was a draw. But I don't see how Cejudo lost the fight. I don't see how Benavidez won the fight. It's a close fight. I think it's a draw. But once again, Cejudo is a whiny bitch, so it doesn't matter. So Henry Cejudo, if you're listening, you're a whiny bitch.
Yeah, I could see a 28-28 card. I could see a 29-27 card. But the judges who ruled it 30-26, Benavidez giving the first round to Joe somehow, and the judge who scored rounds 1, 2, and 3 all to Cejudo, I'm not really sure what fights those judges were watching. Finally, the main event, Demetrius Johnson versus Tim Elliott. And you had a lot of people watching the fight with their eyebrows way up their forehead when the first round was over, because Tim Elliott, after 5 minutes of fighting, was up 10-9 on the judges' scorecard and was really frustrating the, at the time, 8-time defending champion. But, you know, we've seen it. I think, didn't Horiguchi steal the first round against Mighty Mouse? And I think Dodson in one of their fights had an early storm. You know, we've seen it happen before, and we've seen Johnson weather the storm. And, you know, I mean, talk about being a resilient champion. He has been tested, and he got tested here by a Tim Elliott, who I'm not sure what the deal was, how much notice Johnson had that his opponent would be Elliott. I'm assuming he got, you know, fair warning from the UFC and was told to keep it on the down low. But it shows it really shows what you can accomplish with a genius coach and a genius game plan and, you know, athleticism for days. And I mean, truly, you know, we talk about, you know, the speed and the strength of Mighty Mouse, but the one thing that's incredible is the dude's mind. I mean, it seems like he's just a sponge. And, you know, the leaps he's made from fights to fights, just being able to take in all of that knowledge from that coaching team up in Washington, headed up by Matt Hume. Guy's a monster. Title defense number 9. Like I said, ties George St. Pierre and is now one shy of the record of 10 by Spider Silva. Before we start to talk about legacies and title defenses and all that, what did you think of the fight itself? Because, you know, we had the crazy first round, and then Johnson just took over the fight and won rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5 pretty convincingly.
Yeah, I was excited for this fight. I knew who he was fighting. I mean, to me, this was a terrible, like, it was a horrible secret to try and keep, because it's one thing when you're dealing with the no-name fighters, but when you're dealing with a champion, a title fight like this, it's very difficult to keep something like that under wraps with the Ultimate Fighter. So it was pretty known in the underground MMA world, I should say, at least in the Twitter community and whatnot, that Tim Elliott was going to be fighting Demetrius Johnson, that he had won tough and he would be fighting Demetrius Johnson, which is another reason why I just had no interest in the show this season, because I had known what was going to happen right after they had already filmed it. So this is August we're talking about. By the end of August, you already know what's going to happen. So what's the point in watching the whole show? But as far as the fight goes, I was excited for this fight because Tim Elliott's one of those guys that no one really talks about, but he's really, really, really good. Because he's very, very tricky, and he's very unorthodox, and he does things that you're not used to and you can't train for, because, quite frankly, he doesn't know what he's going to do until he gets in the cage. So he's a very, very, very tricky guy to fight, and he's tricky in every aspect of the game. He's a scrambler, as we saw in this fight. He's got weird, crazy striking. He'll do stupid things, like he'll do cartwheel kicks. He'll just start doing cartwheels. He does random things, and it's difficult to train and prepare for that. and going up against a guy that's very difficult to prepare for in Mighty Mouse because he's just so good everywhere and so crafty and in and out and so fast, it was a very interesting matchup. That being said, this is Mighty Mouse we're talking about, and Mighty Mouse is the best fighter in the world, say maybe sans Dominic Cruz, which is a fight that I would love to see again. And we should talk about that sometime, Dominic Cruz versus Demetrius Johnson, because that to me is the biggest super fight in MMA right now. It's the two best fighters in the world. But Tim Elliott was an interesting challenge. And to me, he's one of the top five best flyweights in the world. And he was cut from the UFC way too prematurely. And he's only getting better and better. And he's young. And who knows? He could fight for the title again at some point. He gave DJ a tough first round because A, small cage, B, crafty, tricky style, difficult to prepare for, and B, and C, like you said, you have Demetrius Johnson struggles a little bit with adapting through that first round. It takes him some time to figure out his opponent and figure out what's going on, but a lot of really, really great fighters were exactly like that. A lot of really great fighters took and take their time to figure out their opponent first and see, like, take the first round to really see what they're doing. John Jones does that. Anderson Silva did that. GSP would do that. All these great world-class, pound-for-pound greats, so to say, would all do the exact same thing, and that's take the first couple minutes, the first round, to kind of gauge what's going on. And then from there, they go with their attack. And that's exactly what happened in this fight, except in the first couple minutes when you don't do anything and you're standing in the smaller cage against across from Tim Elliott, then it's a little bit trickier because he's going to come at you, and he's going to come at you from all angles with weird, crafty stuff that you're not going to know what the hell is going to hit you. And now you've got to defend all this while you're trying to figure out what you're going to do and what's going on. So it was an interesting fight, but DJ showed why he's the best in the world.
Yeah, and you know, he's reaching a spot now where he's not just the best in the world currently. We're talking about him being the best in the world of all time, you know, greatest ever achievements. You know, he's at 9 now. His next fight, which I don't know. I guess at this point you give him Benavidez next. I feel like he's so close to tying and surpassing Silva's record that even though bumping him up to 35 will probably be the eventual path they take, I see at least two more title defenses for Johnson in 2017, the first of which being Benavidez, because honestly, there's nobody else at flyweight that makes as much sense, even though they've already fought twice before and their last meeting was a first round knockout. You give Joe B the next fight and then hope to God that a flyweight contender steps forward with a good performance or two between now and, you know, summer, fall 2017. I think once Johnson hits 11 title defenses, I think by then, especially with another win against, you know, a severely underrated fighter like Joseph Benavidez, you know, he's in a weird spot that, you know, he's never been a champion, but the guy has only lost to maybe the two greatest lower weight fighters of all time in Cruz and Johnson. You know, beating Joe three times would be a feat, and then getting that 11th defense. In my books, I'll go ahead and call him the greatest of all time. You know, yes, GSP probably, and Silva and Jones for that matter, probably had a tougher strength of schedule, so to speak. But you know, I don't think any of them really. Maybe Jones, but, you know, he stopped at 8, or we'll say he stopped at 8. But, you know, GSP and Silva had moments where they looked human. You know, Silva in that first Sonnen fight looked human, where Johnson, yeah, he's been tested in the first round, but you show me a Mighty Mouse title defense, and I will show you a one-sided ass-whooping, no matter which one of the 9 we choose from. So, because of his dominance, You know, I will take a little bit away for not fighting that strength of opponent, even though, you know, he's not that, that's not his, his fault, but that's just what you're going to run into at 25. Johnson is my GOAT once he hits 11. And, don't get me started on how much I want to see Cruz versus Johnson, because I've gone down that side road many, many, many times. But, yeah, what do you think is next for Johnson and his legacy? All of that good stuff.
Probably the fight to make now, you have to do the third fight. You have to give Joseph Benavidez his shot. I mean, he's got the longest streak. He's won 6 fights in a row now in this division. He deserves the next shot. It's an interesting fight because the first fight was a close fight. The first fight that they had for the title was a close fight. The second fight ended early because of the knockout. And now it's time for them to fight again, and let's see what happens in this third fight. DJ probably wins, but it's still an interesting fight. All these fights are interesting, and that's the thing. Every single fight, at least most of these fights, are not like gimme fights. These are really good fighters. These are top-level fighters. I mean, Chris Cariasso, okay, that's not the best fighter in the world. But Kyoji Horiguchi is one of the best flyweights in the world. And John Dodson was considered the number 2 guy in the division when he fought him. And
he fought a Russian EPO'd up to the gills.
Yeah, he fought a Russian that was so EPO'd up, he could have fucking ran 20,000. He could have ran a marathon, come back, fought, and he still, like, he was next level. No chance you're beating DJ in that division. DJ is the best fighter at flyweight, so I just don't see anybody beating him. He goes up against every single challenge, every single great fighter, every single top fighter, every single number one contender, and he beats him. And sure, he's had close fights. He's had tough fights. The first John Dodson fight, that was a really, really, really tough fight for him. He almost lost that fight. That was a very close fight, and he still came out with the win. I'm interested in seeing him fight Henry Cejudo again. Because Henry Cejudo, all things aside, all whiny bitchiness aside, he actually had a very good showing against Joseph Benavidez, who's pretty much 1B as far as the best flyweight in the world. He's number 2, but he's like 1B because he's beaten everybody else. The only guys he's lost to, like you mentioned earlier, are Dominic Cruz at 35 twice and DJ at 125 twice. So this is a guy you could talk about pound for pound rankings. You could talk about him being one of the pound for pound best in the world because he beats everybody else at 35 and at 25, which is crazy. So I liked how Henry Cejudo looked. He looked very refined. His striking looked very good. He said he changed camps. His clinch work, we didn't really see all that much of, but I want to see Henry Cejudo fight Demetrius Johnson again at some point. The fight itself, it was definitive, and we saw a clear gap in Henry Cejudo's game during that fight because he had absolutely zero answer for Demetrius Johnson's clinch. And Demetrius Johnson has probably the best clinch work in all of MMA other than DC, but that's a little bit different. I still want to see that fight again, though. I liked Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo looked good. So if Henry Cejudo didn't get screwed, if it was a draw or it went Henry Cejudo's way, then we wouldn't be talking about this right now. We'd be talking about Cejudo versus DJ too, because people would want to see that again. But instead, we're talking about Benavidez. But it's okay, like I said, because Henry Cejudo is a whiny bitch.
Damn, and on that, I think I'm done breaking down the tough card. If you are, let's get to the news. Definitely going to get sued a ton of money one day for using that clip so many times.
Can't wait.
Cyborg apparently was approached by the UFC to fight for a new women's featherweight title. And I guess they wanted her to fight in December or January. Cyborg turned it down. She apparently was offered Holm and Jermaine de Randamie. I forget who it was. It may have been Brett Okamoto who said he followed up with Holm's camp and said that they were cool with a catch weight, maybe 138-pound fight. Not so much talk stalling when they moved to 145. Which I guess makes a little bit of sense for Holm because she, you know, seems to make 35 easy. It's not, really a tough cut for her, like a lot of bantamweights who originally were featherweights before the UFC opened up that women's 135-pound weight class back in 2012. So Holly Holm and Jermaine de Randamie, the two names that were thrown around. Cyborg posted this long Instagram message saying that she was recovering from being sick or an injury or something, but she'd be ready to fight in March and make 45. So it sounds like unless anything gets in the way, the UFC seems down to make a new weight class, which, you know, my feelings aside on whether I think there should be another division in the UFC, my feelings aside, it wouldn't have made any sense for them to bring Cyborg over and put her in a couple of catchweight fights against bums and not make a 45 belt. I mean, the whole point of bringing Cyborg to the UFC is to eventually give her big name fights and potentially put a belt around her. You want to, you know, give her a couple of bums at first to kind of lay a foundation, show the fans who she is. And we already know there's no way she's going to cut 235. I mean, she really, really, really struggles to make 40. And I believe, maybe the reason she had to take off time and she couldn't fight now was because she needs to recover from the damage that she did, you know, trying to make 140. Obviously 45 should be an easier cut for her. And like I said, unless anything, any roadblocks come up between now and then, Cyborg said she's ready to fight in March. I'm equally as intrigued by Holm Cyborg and Jermaine de Randamie Cyborg. And even though Holm is the bigger name, you know, and is obviously known as the woman who stopped Rousey, stylistically, man, Jermaine de Randamie maybe, would be a tougher test for her. I think Cyborg probably wins both of those fights though. I would love to see a fight between Rousey and Cyborg, whether that's at 45 or 40. I think those are really the only two places you could see that fight occur at. Cause like I said, we aren't going to see a Chris Cyborg making 135 pounds, nor do I want to see that. But yeah, do you, and if, you know, I mean, I guess I don't mind them making a new weight class just because it makes sense. And even though there's not a huge talent pool now at featherweight, I assume, you know, one could, you know, grow just like one did at bantamweight after, the UFC opened up, their ranks to women back, I guess around 4 years ago now. Do you like this whole idea of the UFC opening now a third women's weight class at 145?
From a sporting standpoint, no, because who's going to fight? Like, who's going to challenge Cyborg? Nobody. Nobody's going to challenge Cyborg. There's not going to be a single person. And then after Cyborg, who's going to come up? Not really anybody. From an entertainment aspect, yes, great idea. Because you need to put a belt on Cyborg. And in order to put a belt on Cyborg, you have to make a phony division. So make a phony division, and let's get a belt on Cyborg already, because there's nothing more marketable than having Cyborg as a champion. And then you can either eventually, hopefully, maybe, probably not, make the Rousey fight, or you can find someone who has the female testicles to step up and fight Cyborg, who's the 35-pound champion and wants to fight Cyborg. I know.
Who has the ovaries to fight Cyborg?
I understand. I understand the equivalent, but it just doesn't sound the same. The ovaries.
I'm going to start using that.
I'm about to get hit with a ton of feminist hate. It's the female testicles. That's what we need here. We need the female testicles. We need someone like Amanda Nunes who's like, I don't care, I'll fight anybody, even though she probably would never fight Cyborg. We need someone like Jermaine Duraname who's like, I don't give a shit, give me Cyborg, I'll fight Cyborg. And that'd be a fun fight because Jermaine's a sick TIE fighter. She's got crazy kickboxing. She is on a different level than pretty much every single girl at 35, yet she has a lot of different other holes in her game, so she's not going to do so well. I don't think she'd beat Cyborg, but that would be a fun fight. Holly Holm would be a fun fight, too. And Holly Holm, from a marketing standpoint, is probably the best fight you can make, other than Ronda, of course. But that is the best fight you can make against Cyborg, because the casual viewer doesn't remember the fact that she lost earlier this year to Miesha Tate, nor do they remember that she lost earlier this year to Valentina Shevchenko on Fox. Because quite frankly, you listening right now probably forgot that happened too, because most people did, because it was so a footnote.
I completely did forget about that. I'm not even going to lie.
Everybody forgot about that.
Even though I wrote the Shevchenko Pena thing on his run sheet, I did not think once that, damn, she just beat Holly fucking Holm. Shit.
Yeah, she beat Holly Holm, and Holly Holm was the champion, and she knocked out Ronda Rousey, and she lost twice this year. She's had a terrible year, awful year for Holly Holm. Yet that fight would sell more than every single fight in the UFC, except for the a Conor McGregor fight, of course, and Ronda Rousey fight. So that would be fun to book. That'd be fun for an entertainment value. But Cyborg most likely mollywops both of them. I mean, she's terrifying. She's scary. She's huge. She's scary. And is there anybody who could beat her? I don't know. Probably somewhere, someday. But right now, no.
Speaking about scary, another UFC champion who does not have any defenses yet, but man, his last few finishes have been super scary. Tyron Woodley, crazy KO power, coming off that draw against Wonderboy, calling out Nick Diaz at welterweight. Woodley, you know, I can't blame him for calling out people, going for the money like Connor. He wanted that fight. Now Nick Diaz, he wants that fight now that Nick Diaz is off suspension. Honestly, I don't know if he realized it, but for a guy who his rep was kind of known as, well, he doesn't want to fight Lombard because Lombard would always beat him up in the gym, you know, and now after a very close, hard-fought fight with Stephen Thompson, to, I think, myself and a lot of fans, this just comes off as Woodley saying, I'm kind of afraid to fight Wonderboy next because that fight was way closer than I thought it was going to be. That draw was close enough to where I don't see how you don't make a rematch. You know, there's the next in line, I guess, would be Maya, but he has a fight against Condit? No, he beat Condit. Does Maya have a fight scheduled currently?
I don't think so.
But I can't blame Woodley for calling out Nick Diaz, but man, it just seems very transparent that he wants nothing to do with a rematch versus Wonderboy. That was a fun fight, man.
Yeah, that's the fight. I mean, that is the fight that needs to be booked from the sporting aspect, for the entertainment of the fight value aspect, and from my bias aspect. That's the fight that needs to be booked. We need to see Wonderboy versus Woodley 2. It was a great fight. Everyone would love to see it again. There's no reason not to book it, other than the fact that, yeah, Nick Diaz is coming back, and yeah, that sells a ton more than a Wonderboy fight, and yeah, there's GSP floating around somewhere out there in the universe. And there's a lot of big fights. There's Robbie Lawler, too, sitting around there somewhere waiting for a rematch. Damian Maya, but that's a boring fight. I want to see the Wonderboy fight, but more likely than not, if Nick Diaz is coming back and Nick Diaz wants that fight and Woodley wants that fight, you're going to get that fight over the Wonderboy fight.
moving down the old run sheet. This MMA Athletes Association news coming down the pipe, I guess about a week and a day ago. You had Bjorn Rebney, George St. Pierre, Cain Velasquez, TJ Dillashaw, Cowboy Cerrone, Tim Kennedy. It's funny how certain guys have cemented their opinion, and certain guys like Cowboy have kind of backpedaled, saying, "Yo, I was just standing up there because they wanted another face facing the board. I'm looking out for rights, but you know, took a giant step back when he realized the magnitude of exactly what he was doing." So you have this official organization that's not a fighters union, but, you know, claims it's going to be the next big step in, you know, getting to a equal spot in the sport. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the implications of this association? And I mean, you know, what's next? You know, obviously the UFC and their new management and, you know, Dana and Ari Emanuel are going to be as resistant as they can against this, but you know, it's seeming more and more like this is just eventually going to happen whether they want it to or not. What happens next? Because honestly, even, you know, as much as I am familiar with the law and I've looked into all of this, it seems like there isn't really a definite course or path that we're on here.
The concept, okay. My opinion is, I listened to Bjorn Rebney speak this week. I listened to him on Ariel Helwani's show on the MMA Hour.
And to be quite frankly, I'm really glad you're on this week because I haven't had the time to listen to any of this. It's been finals week. I've been as in the loop as I can be, but with this one topic, I am I'm scarily misinformed, considering I host a podcast about mixed martial arts.
Yeah, get on that. You should be listening to all this while you're studying. You should be doing all this. If you are going to host an MMA podcast, you need to be
big
on
brain.
Top. Big brain, Walter.
Brick by brick.
Shout out Portnoy. Salt shout out Earth. Barstool Sports. I love you guys.
Everybody knows the rules.
Everybody knows the rules. One take, one bite. Yeah, I listened to Bjorn Rebney. What he said on Ariel Helwani's show, the plan that he laid out, his plan of attack, which is the idea of basically you gather these fighters together, you group these fighters together, and you get a board together, and the fighters collectively, not him, the fighters collectively make decisions on what they want to do and on certain issues. And the goal is to eventually bring it so that the UFC calls them, WME, IMG, and the UFC call them and say, listen, we want to bring you to the negotiating table. We want you to come out. You guys need to form a union. In order for this work to work, we need you guys to form a union because you have to do this. And then we need to create a collective bargaining agreement and we need to come together just like we have in baseball, just like we have in basketball, just like the major sports. So that plan of attack makes sense on paper. It does. It truly makes sense. It's more difficult than that, but it's a fairly simple concept. You gather the fighters together. Eventually, they have to agree with them and they have to say, okay, you guys need to unionize so that we can get antitrust benefits and whatnot. And then everybody's happy. Collective bargaining agreement, boom. We've got a major sport, just like every other sport. But Bjorn Rebney is hated by a majority of the MMA community, a majority of the combat sports community in general. And when you're trying to rally together fighters, it's best not to have a guy on board who was notorious for screwing fighters. It's very difficult to get the support of people who have been wronged or know people that have been wronged by a guy who's involved in the whole thing, who's trying to figurehead the whole thing. Bjorn Rebney reeks of bullshit. He reeks of a scheme. He reeks of a money-making ploy. He sees dollars and cents here, and he's going, okay, I fucked up and I failed as a businessman already. I built Bellator, and then I was such a notorious dick and asshole that they kicked me out of my own company because I didn't know what the hell I was doing, and I didn't understand how things worked. Well, now he sees more money and he sees another way to get back in the limelight. So he figured out, okay, I'm going to get revenge on the UFC. It'd be one thing if Bjorn was talking about how he is going to, how he wants, this is all about the fighters, rallying the fighters together. And he ignores everything about the Dana White stuff. He ignores the UFC. He's not trying to attack them in any way. He's trying to do this about the fighters. But to be tweeting at Dana White and to be saying all these things about Dana White, and to it's almost like he's making this him versus Dana White all over again. And it just reeks of shit. It reeks of complete shit. I understand I completely understand the point of view that Cowboy has, which is, hold up, I didn't realize he was on board. This is a little shady if he's on board, because I'm not down with that. And that's the point of view for most fighters. It's going to be a very, very difficult time pulling this off if Bjorn Rebney is heading it. I'm not saying it won't be done. It's going to be done. It's going to be done eventually, because it has to be done. Because just like Bjorn said on the MMA Hour, there will be no sport in 10 years if it's not done. Because quite frankly, the athletes that go into MMA, the athletes that want to fight, the people that want to fight, the people that are going to be stars, they're not going to want to fight if there's no money, if there's no future, if there's no pension, if there's no retirement. You need benefits. There needs to be health care. You need to be able to go into a fight knowing that you're going to be secure at the end of it. And when you're done fighting, you're going to be secure. Because just like Bjorn said on the MMA Hour, these fighters get hurt badly. And we're learning more and more about concussions. We're learning more and more about brain trauma. We're learning more and more about the health and safety of fighters and what the damage actually is, not just in boxing, because in boxing, they're only really learning now. Same with football and all the other contact sports or combat sports. MMA is the same thing. There's just as much damage in this sport. There's just as much damage. And these fighters are going to be in such trouble if there's not something set up for them.
Yeah, and you see a fair split in other sports that's either at or above 50-50. And the fact that what was the number? Fighters get paid 13% of overall revenue. And I do get that. Eight, wow. And I do get that maybe the UFC is investing more back into the sport as a league that's already established, but 8% is crazy. And especially when you think about the fact that the people at the top, for the most part, are getting paid pretty decently. It's the fighters in the middle and the fighters at the bottom of cards that really get paid nothing. I mean, perfect example is Sarah D'Elio. She just fought at Bellator. This is a woman with a win over the current UFC bantamweight champion, Amanda Nunes. She just fought at Bellator, I think, 165. She made 15 and 15. Not 15,000. She made 1,500 to show and 1,500 to win. That is a insanely small amount of money if you're trying, you know, that is basically MMA is a hobby for you, and between camps and training and traveling and diet, you're probably losing money overall in the big scheme of things. It's crazy. So, you know, we only can hope that we're going in the right direction. And just another reason why the Fertittas chose the fucking perfect time to back out of the game. 4.3 bills. A couple of smart guys over there in Vegas. Moving down the list. Apparently, there's a rumor. There's nothing really to discuss, I guess, until we hear some names thrown out. But rumors are that Mike Goldberg, under this new UFC ownership, is out. Rogan might have a new broadcast partner. Apparently, they're trying to go away from the whole, you know, they want it to be more of a mainstream broadcast as opposed to the, oh, he's rocked, this is amazing, this is incredible. Rogan said he's probably going to back out soon, so I don't know how long he will stay, but the rumor is Rogan will have a new broadcast partner soon. Thoughts on who might replace him or just them getting rid of Goldberg in general?
What the fuck?
I'm going to miss him, man. I like Bruce Buffer is the voice of the Octagon, but man, it is going to be so weird to hear a broadcast not narrated by old Mike Effing Goldberg.
The fucking UFC that I grew up with, the UFC that I knew and loved, is dying every single fucking day, and it's starting to piss me off. Listen, Mike Goldberg, let's get completely honest. Mike Goldberg sucks, and it's fantastic. Mike Goldberg is so ridiculously bad that he's incredibly good.
The little eagle flies again.
I know that makes no sense to most of you listening to this, and it's not supposed to, because it makes sense to me, and that's all that matters. Mike Goldberg is fantastic, and the fact that they're even thinking about replacing him, let alone probably going to replace him, because where there's smoke, there's fire. Ugh. Disgusting. I can't even think. Who can you bring in that can bring the level of hype that Mike Goldberg and Joe Rogan bring in? And the answer is no one. And apparently their plan is they want to get rid of the hype masters. So eventually they're going to do it with Rogan too. And they want to make it boring like sports. But are we going to have golf broadcasters? We're going to have golf. And he just threw, oh, high kick. McGregor drops him. Oh, he's going in. And it's over. This fight's over. Wow. What a knockout by Conor McGregor. I mean, if that's MMA, if that's the future of the sport, I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah. And, you know, he hasn't officially gotten the axe yet, but for old time's sake, let's hope I don't get pinged for this. Here is 1 minute of Mike Goldberg's greatest.
You do know when those Nerf footballs get wet, though, then they actually do get heavy. Diaz smells the opening.
Because if his name is Keith Johnson, then the Dean of Mean makes no sense. You're right, Mike Goldberg.
Catches a quick jab.
That was a straight left.
Yeah, it was, pardon me.
Again. And Chuck Liddell. Here where great heavyweights like Mike Tyson, George Holmes, and all have fought in years past. But still, as a jiu-jitsu fighter, he's unaccustomed to being on the top.
Michael Jordan-esque in his grappling skills is Travis Luter.
No. No, he's not.
He's not that good?
No, he's not that good.
His precision is really precise.
Highly touted. You almost want to just sit back and watch, so could you, and soak it in.
Jordan. Kobe Bryant?
No, he's not that good.
Tim Duncan?
I don't know any other basketball player. I really don't. Larry Bird, is he still alive?
Elbow. You hear that? Speaking of Portuguese, that's Japanese, brother. Oh, really? Thank you. I should have known that. You're the one married to a Japanese chick. That is correct.
Tito taking a book out of Chuck's chapter right there.
Tito taking a book out of Chuck's chapter right there.
This podcast
love that.
Is getting, this podcast is totally getting taken off YouTube for that. And it's going to be fantastic.
Hell yeah. Last bit of news before we look ahead to this weekend. Shevchenko Pena going to headline UFC Denver January 28th. Who you got?
This is an interesting fight. Juliana Pena is, if you count tough fights, 7-0 in the UFC. I mean, she's on a tear. She's phenomenal. But Valentina Shevchenko she's the best fighter you've never heard of. She's
yo, that
really,
gun tat is sexy too. That's all
I'm gonna say. I'm sorry, I can't. Listen, she's a great fighter, probably a very nice girl. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to keep it nice. I like her in this fight, actually. I think she wins this fight. She is, like I just said, she's the best fighter you've never heard of. She beat Holly Holm, who everybody knows Holly Holm and knows how good Holly Holm is. She beat Holly Holm. She had a very close fight with Amanda Nunes, who's now the current champion. I like Valentina Shevchenko in this fight. I like Valentina Shevchenko, and I like Valentina Shevchenko to fight for the UFC title and give a tough fight to whoever the champion is.
Ronda.
Maybe. Maybe Ronda. Maybe Amanda Nunes. Maybe someone else. Maybe Mighty Mouse.
Dun. Mighty Mouse goes ahead with the sex change to become the greatest man woman in UFC history. Yeah, I have Shevchenko, too. I think she's able to keep the fight standing, and doing that, the fight is hers to lose. Looking ahead, I guess, not really looking ahead because the fight is going on, or the card is going on right now. We just had Randy Rude Boy Brown defeat Brian Kamosi. We've had a bunch of decisions. This UFC Fight Night 102 card, Lewis versus Abdurakhimov. Lewis a big favorite here, looking to stamp his place in the elites of the heavyweight division. Francis Gano looking to do the same. Any thoughts on this card in general? I'm not going to make any qualms that it's a stacked card. It's not very stacked at all. And honestly, there are some fun fights, you know,
Dude, from top to bottom, we've got you. I mean, think about this. You have such great stars like
Saparbek, Safarov.
Exactly. Ryan Jades. He's a superstar.
You have GM3, Gerald Meerschaert, which his nickname is GM3 because there's no other nicknames that didn't involve the word shart.
Listen, Jake, I've watched this sport for the longest time now, and I used to know everybody who fought on every card. In the last year, with things that have been going on in my life, I have seen significantly less fights than I have in previous years. I'm looking at this card right now. I recognize names, but there are some names here who I couldn't pick out of a lineup. I mean, there's some names here that are just...
Especially in the prelims, yeah.
That shows you how many cards we have and how just watered down these fight pass cards. I mean, if you're looking at the main event of this card, it's a guy whose name I can't pronounce versus Derek Lewis, and that's a problem. Like, that's not a main event. That's not... I mean, there's a reason this is on Fight Pass, because you can't put this on TV. You can't put this on Fox Sports 1 because no one's going to watch it. It's going to draw nothing. It's going to have under a million views, which would be awful for the UFC.
I don't think a split fight. Decision against Walt Harris should earn you a main event fight.
No, in no way, shape, or form. But there are still some interesting fights here. Volante's fighting, which is always fun. Love me some John Volante. Shout out Volante.
And Lewis and Gano are the two, you know, up and coming smashers at 265. So the fact that they're both on the same card, to me, is really the only saving grace of watching it. I'd like to say a good indicator of whether a fighter is really worth anything. Do they have a Wikipedia page? If they have a Wikipedia, then yeah, you know, someone has taken the time and put their wins and losses. Yeah, sure. Usually on a card, you'll see zero on stacked cards, maybe one or two fighters on most cards at the very bottom who don't have a Wikipedia page. For this one, you have a main carder who doesn't have a Wikipedia, and only 6 of the 16 prelim fighters owning their own Wikipedia page. And it's not an exact science, but not a good sign. Not a good sign at all. And I guess right now we're getting to the end of the prelims, and the main card should be starting up here on Fight Pass soon. If you are listening live, going down to the Times Union Center in Albany, New York.
Yeah, I should probably be there right now, except I'm not because it's not worth the 3.5 hour drive up to Albany. Although, if I'm driving, it's probably more like 2.5-3 hours.
Because you'd be speeding, dog. Like Rick Ross.
Shout out New York State Highway Patrol. What State up? Troopers. Love you guys.
I guess, unless you have anything else on tonight's card, we'll go 400 miles to Toronto, which I did a Google search before this show so I could do that.
Did you really?
That special segue. I did. 400 miles west to Ontario, Canada. Gordo, at the Air Canada Center in Toronto. Oh, yeah, there.
Oh, yeah, you're going to see the UFC there in Toronto, eh? Yeah,
that's right.
You got the Max Holloway fighting and the Anthony Pettis. Oh, yeah, he missed the weight, though. He was eating too many of those donuts beforehand.
I'm not even going to try and do a Canadian accent because it's terrible. But, man, we originally were supposed to see a rematch from UFC 187, DC fighting Anthony Johnson. But I guess November 25th, Cormier pulled out due to an injury. The bout was scrapped. I guess they tried to book Johnson against Gegard Mousasi, but, Johnson wanted to wait for DC's return. So instead, they move Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis, the co-main event, up to the main event. And they seemingly make this an interim title fight just because it's the main event, which we'll talk about the belt later. I think this is the most unscrupulous interim belt of all time. This is the most meaningless piece of gold the UFC I've ever seen them give out, period. But we'll talk about all that later. I want to start with the prelims. And as much as I was getting on how shallow a card tonight's card was, we got some bangers on the prelims tomorrow, even on UFC Fight Pass. Zach Makovsky and Dustin Ortiz both may be fighting for their careers. I think they're both 2-3 in their last five. Been fighting a lot of the elite at 125. Hustam Khabalov fighting Jason Sago at a catchweight. John McDessie versus Lando Venata. That's going to be a banger. You do not want to miss John McDessie versus Lando Venata. That's going to be fun as fuck. Mitch Gagnon versus Matthew Lopez when we get to the Fox Sports 1 card. Valerie Letourneau, who was unable to make 115. It'll be a catchweight, 117.5 versus Vivian Pereira. The grappler from Canada, Olivier Aubin-Mercier, fighting Drew Dober. And a couple of Russians throwing down at 205. Nikita Krylov taking on Misha Surkunov. What do you make of the prelims? What stands out for you? I love that John McDessie versus Lando Venata fight. I'm looking forward to that one.
Oh, yes. Lando Venata, he gave us a little taste of what
taste.
He has in his arsenal. Just a little taste when he fought Tony Ferguson on short notice. And it was groovy, as he likes to call himself. He has a very interesting style, and it's the same thing, kind of like that Tim Elliott. You don't know what the hell he's going to do. You can't train for him. He's going to go in there, and he's just going to do things that he doesn't even know what he's going to do before he goes in there. And John McDessie is a very tough fighter, great striker, so that's going to be a very, very, very fun fight. Also, on the Fight Pass prelims, Rustam Khabilov, who's just so tough and so gritty and a tough fight for anybody in the lightweight division. The lightweight division stacked. He's in a fight. Makovsky and Dustin Ortiz, two really, really, really good wrestlers, really good scramblers. I'm excited for that one. That's another good fight. So the Fight Pass prelims here, all really, 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 really good fights. I like that.
And that brings us to the main card, which, honestly, five intriguing fights starting at welterweight. Jordan Mean against the young Emil Meek, who had a career-defining KO win over Husamar Paul Harris. And I think this is interesting because I kind of look at this as 2016 Jordan Meehan fighting maybe like a 2011, 2012 Jordan Meehan. You know, this is, you know, the spot Meek is in now is very similar to the spot that Meehan was in a few years ago. Young, up and coming, very promising. We saw what Mian's ceiling was, I guess, you know, he's lost to Woodley Brown and Thiago Alves over his career, but I think just with the experience that Mian has, he's fought a lot of guys. I think that's going to be the edge for him over Meek, who, look, Meek's going to have a great career. I think he's just 28, doesn't have that many fights under his record. He's 8-2, with his last win being that Venator win back in May, where he finished Husamar Paulharas in less than a minute. It'll be an interesting fight, and it will definitely be one of the more interesting debuts of this half of 2016, but I still have Mian getting the job done just because of it, you know, his superior experience.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Jordan, the crazy thing here is the older guy in this fight is not.
Yeah, Mian's younger. Mian.
Jordan Mian is younger than Emile Meek, which is crazy, but that shows you how young Jordan Mian got into the sport and how much damage he's already taken at his age. That being said, if you look at Jordan Mian's last couple fights, he hasn't fought since 2015. The last night he fought was the same night that Nick Diaz last fought. That was the Silva Diaz fight card back in 2015. And then he retired, and now he's coming back. That fight that he had that night against Thiago Alves, he was beating the crap out of Thiago Alves until Thiago caught him with one kick, one well-placed kick to the body that took everything out of him, and that was it. And we know how powerful Thiago Alves' legs are and how powerful his kicking game is. So he's a good fighter. He's an underrated fighter, an incredibly underrated fighter, and he's been for years and years and years and years, and he's going to show it tomorrow night, I think. I think we're going to see a fantastic performance from Jordan Mian. I think Emile Meek is a good fighter, but I think his win over Paulharas wasn't exactly a definitive. Sure, he knocked him out, but I don't think it was a definitive win. I think Paulharas is a better fighter. I think if Paulharas grabs a hold of his legs, that's game over. If Paulharas grabs a hold of him, it's game over. Fact of the matter is, Paulharas shot in, got caught with those elbows to the head, and that was that. So I like Jordan Mian. Emile Meek maybe has a good future. He's got a lot of knockout victories on his record. He's got heavy hands. He hits hard. I like Jordan Mian.
Which brings us to a middleweight fight. Tim Kennedy and Kelvin Gastelum. Gastelum, this is funny. You have both Gastelum and Cerrone on this card. They were supposed to fight each other one pay-per-view ago at UFC 205. Gastelum couldn't make weight. Cerrone gets put on the co-main against Matt Brown, and Gastelum gets matched up against Donald Cerrone's teammate, Tim Kennedy. This is an interesting fight. If Kennedy for sure is going to want to follow the Neil Magny game plan of using size and strength to kind of overwhelm Kelvin, but Kelvin has that strength and speed that I think his ticket and game plan is just going to be putting pressure on Tim Kennedy and not letting Kennedy dictate the pace of the fight. I think Kelvin probably has the tools and the boxing to maybe not finish Tim Kennedy, but just keep him on his toes and keep him frustrated. And like we've seen in other fights, you know, when Tim dictates the pace of the fight and where the fight's going, he usually wins. But if a guy is turned up a little faster and is, going at a speed that Kennedy is uncomfortable with, he might get a little frustrated. And I think that's what Kelvin will have to do, and I think that's what he's going to do. Yes, admittedly, a little biased going into my pick, but I'm taking KG over Kennedy in this one.
Yeah, this is a tough fight for KG because he's going up and fighting a big dude in Tim Kennedy. And I like KG in it still, though, because Tim Kennedy's been out of the sport for 2 years. He's coming in and he's fighting a guy who's been pretty damn active. Not only has he been fairly active, but he is one of the best up-and-coming fighters in the sport if he can get his weight issues under wraps. He beat Johnny Hendricks in his last fight. That's all I need to really say. I mean, this is an incredible fighter. Yes, he's fighting a weight class up, and he's fighting a tough fighter, a one weight class up, so he's going to be at a size disadvantage. But I mean, Kelvin Gastelum ran through the Ultimate Fighter without any trouble, ran through huge guys. Sure, Tim Kennedy's better than any dude he fought on tough, but I see him beating Tim Kennedy. It's going to be a tough fight, but his speed and his fight IQ, which he has some pretty damn good fight IQ, that's what's going to take him to the victory.
And really quick, a couple of tweets. I missed Mad Samurai. He had tweeted in about a half an hour ago when we were talking about Maya and Woodley and all that, saying Maya was offered Lawler, wants to wait, but may fight if it's the same card as a title fight so he can fill in if needed. I got another tweet, actually two, from a West Lynn Eagle AH, which I think this is a good time to bring up my blocked segment.
Oh man,
where someone sends me a nasty tweet and I block them. This one is at West Lynn Eagle AH, and he just tweeted me, "Fag hot bitch." West Lynn Eagle, you're blocked.
Blocked.
Anyway, move.
That's really, really, like, that is...
That's offensive.
That's incredible. Whoever that guy is, that's really, really offensive, and you really need to, offensive. You need to think about your life a little bit.
You know, and this picture, it's the guy, I guess, standing in front of Wrigley Field, which I thought was the friendly confines, you know, the whole Cubs, the lovable losers, let's play,
that dude ain't
play
friendly.
Two. He is very unfriendly, I would even say.
No friendliness, no love going on here.
Speaking of no love, you are going to want to load up the Chaw and grab some Molsons for this featherweight fight. Cub Swanson and Duho Choi, they had a awesome stare down today during the weigh-ins. Man, this is going to be a fun fight. Cub and Duho, do you want to lead this one off?
That's all you need to know. Cub Swanson versus Duho Choi is this is a barn burner. This is your fight of the night. Actually, your next fight might be the next two fights could be your fight of the night too. Any of these three fights that we're about to talk about could be your fight of the night. These are incredible fights. I love Duho Choi. I absolutely love Duho Choi. I think this is someone who's going to fight for the title. He's going to give wars and title fights, and he is going to be entertaining. He's going to be big in Korea. He is fantastic. This is his breakout party. I think he beats Cub Swanson. I think he knocks Cub Swanson out. His timing is sick. He reminds me in a lot of ways of Conor McGregor. And tomorrow night he'll show. I believe Duho Choi's got this.
Yeah, it seems like when Cub fights guys who come after him, like an Aldo, like a Mendez, like a Holloway, like an Edgar, he doesn't really perform that well. He doesn't have the skills to take Choi down. Choi's going to keep it standing up. And to me, it's just a matter of time to when he lands that right and, finishes Swanson off. Choi, you know, his really only flaw I can pick out is it does seem like when he throws, he leaves himself a little open to getting hit back. He stands a little high, leaves, you know, his head open for counters. But aside from that, you know, he's and that's a flaw I expect to go away soon, because the guy's young. He's obviously getting better and better. He's got wicked hot power. The guy's just an absolute monster. Anyone at his weight class is who is not scared stiff of fighting Choi doesn't fully understand what Choi is capable of, because that dude can fight, man. That guy can fight. Moving on, Donald Cerrone and Matt Brown. You know, it's funny. In talking about a potential war between Cerrone and Masvidal, I said I was leaning Cerrone because he has more of a tool belt, and I think that's my exact breakdown for this fight too. You know, Brown can throw, Brown can wrestle. I think on the mat, though, Cerrone probably has the advantage. Cerrone is not the kind of dude you want to put on his back unless you're 100% sure your jiu-jitsu and defense game is tight. Also, you know, standing up, both of these guys can take a tremendous amount of damage, but as far as who's got the weaker chin, I mean, here it's not who has the weaker chin, but who has the weaker liver. I think both guys have a weird trait you don't see often, which is they're more susceptible to body blows than actual head strikes. But man, this could be a back and forth. This, you know, if you told me this ended in the first round, I would be very, very, man, I would say it's almost a coin flip because either guy can finish the fight. But if you say one guy outlasts the other and wins either in the later rounds or by decision, I'm leaning Cerrone. And for that reason, I'm going to go Cowboy this one and pick Donald Cerrone.
Donald Cerrone has won 3 fights in a row, and Matt Brown has lost 4 of his last 5.
Trajectory.
That's pretty much all you need to know about this fight. Donald Cerrone wins a lot. Matt Brown loses a lot. And Matt Brown went on a great run a couple of years back, and ever since he lost to Robbie Lawler, he couldn't get over that last little hump. He hasn't been able to recover since. This is going to be a fun fight. It's going to be a back and forth fight for a bit, but I think this is a Donald Cerrone win. I think Donald Cerrone will chop at him. He'll hit him with some body strikes, and we'll see Matt Brown crumple the canvas. We're gonna see some liver kicks from a Mr. Donald Cowboy Cerrone. Make it 4 in a row. 4 in a row in a completely different weight class. 4 in a row at welterweight. Donald Cerrone fighting for the welterweight title. We may be seeing that in 2017.
Yeah, we very, very well could. Moving on, last topic before we wrap this up, which, Ross, I very much enjoyed your return to the MMA podcast. We got to have you on more often. Holloway Pettis, before we break down the card, I just want to say this is the dumbest championship the UFC has ever given out.
It's a half a championship. It's a quarter of a championship.
Yeah, it's like, look, I totally agree and side with the UFC stripping, or it's quote unquote relinquished, which is going to be the biggest asterisk as far as language used. You know, Jones was stripped twice. Connor will officially in the record books, it will say Connor relinquished his title. Connor was stripped of his belt because he's not going to be fighting for 10 months. And he said in interviews that he did not relinquish the title. And you and I talked about it and said, yeah, I think the UFC is going to try and keep Connor as a two-weight champ as long as possible. We were wrong about that. The UFC actually acting strangely, acting in the taste of sportsmanship and a meritocracy, giving Aldo the featherweight championship. Yes, though he lost to him in 13 seconds. You can't hold the featherweight belt and go out and have 3, you know, you win the belt and then you fight 3 times outside of the division and then say you're going to take a year off to go be a daddy. You can't do that. I, you know, yes, I agree he should keep his 55 title, but I also agree with the UFC making Aldo the undisputed champion. However, making this a interim featherweight championship means absolutely nothing, even though Pettis missed weight, so only Holloway is eligible for this made-up belt. It doesn't matter, because the winner is going to fight Aldo for the real belt, no matter who wins. They should have just called this a title eliminator fight. I don't know why, or I know why they did, because this is UFC 206, and from the get-go, the UFC wanted to make a big deal about this, because it's the Air Canada Center, where there's a ton of seats, and they had the long-standing attendance record, and they wanted to pack the place with GSP. GSP demanded revenue sharing. The UFC said, no, we're just going to give you a lump sum and a pay-per-view share. George's camp wasn't cool with that. And, you know, I read an article recently. I forget what side it was on, but just search UFC 206, the pay-per-view that never was. You know, this card was supposed to be all about the GSP return. That never happened. Whether we see a GSP return period now is a big question mark. So they wanted to make this a big card. So let's just, you know, let's make up this belt, this interim championship. You know, talk about a paper champion. This is as made up and as unscrupulous as a belt that I've ever seen. But I feel like I'm talking in circles now. Yeah, it should just be a title eliminator, and I'm assuming the winner will fight Aldo early 2017. Aldo seems ready. I haven't heard about any holdbacks on their camp. Thoughts on the belt before we break down the fight and then put a bow on this podcast and get the F out of here?
What belt?
Exactly. So is that all you have, or
that was a serious question. What belt?
The UFC interim featherweight championship that only Max Holloway is eligible for. If Pettis, I almost want Pettis to win that, even though I'm rooting for Max and Max is the favorite. I'm almost rooting for Pettis now, because there shouldn't be an interim title involved here. And if Pettis wins, they should take that belt that they made for this fight and throw it in an incinerator or something. I don't know. Give it to Kenny Florian, because he never got a belt. Who knows?
Jake. For those listening
at
home,
give it a chill.
For those listening at home, me and Jake can see each other currently through the magic of Skype. Jake.
Hi.
This championship.
Whoa, is that a gun? Oh, no, that's a championship.
That I have just taken out has just as much value and just as much meaning of me being the UFC interim featherweight champion as whoever wins tomorrow night's contest.
Ross has
does.
A replica WWE championship belt slung across his shoulder right now for those of you who cannot see Ross, which is everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, I haven't said that in a while and it feels good to say that again. Ladies and gentlemen, I am now your UFC interim featherweight champion, and you can be too, because everyone gets to be the UFC interim featherweight champion today. Congratulations.
Hell yeah. Congratulations, buddy. Oh, man. Yeah, this, you know, it almost takes away a little bit from the awesome fight it's going to be. I don't know.
Absolutely.
What... Break it down for us, Pettis versus Max. I have a feeling that we're both going to be picking Max Holloway here, but I want to hear your breakdown first.
When this fight was first announced, I was ecstatic because this is a fantastic fight, and the fact that they have tarnished it by doing this whole interim crap and now Pettis missing weight and all that, it's been tarnished a bit, but it's still a fantastic fight. It's a really, really fun fight, really, really fun stylistic fight. It's a shame that it has to be at 145 pounds because Max Holloway would gladly fight at 155 pounds, as he stated before. Max Holloway is one of those guys that does not give a fuck, and I love Max Holloway. He's good because he does not give a fuck, and he's young. When he first made his debut, I think he was 19 years old when he made his UFC debut, and I remember that. He fought Dustin Poirier. It was UFC 143, I believe, was the card number, and it was back in February 2012. And he came in as a short notice replacement. He was 4-0. He was this kid out of Hawaii, this 19-year-old kid out of Hawaii, and he fought Dustin Poirier. And he pieced Dustin Poirier, who's a fantastic fighter and a fantastic boxer, a fantastic striker. He pieced him up on the feet. He was piecing him up until Dustin got a takedown, got mount position, and then triangle armbar. But he showed so much promise in that fight. After that fight, everyone, including me, was going, that kid's going to be something. Now, here we are a couple years later. He lost two more fights since that fight. Those two losses were, one, a close fight that he probably should have gotten the victory in against Dennis Bermudez. And the other one was against Conor McGregor, which we all know, Conor McGregor, champion. Max Holloway is fantastic. Max Holloway is really, 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 really good. Anthony Pettis is really, really, really good. But Max Holloway is really, 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 really good. And if Jose Aldo and Conor McGregor didn't exist, Max Holloway surely would be the champion right now. To be on a 9-fight winning streak and not get a title shot shows you how ridiculous things are as far as the entertainment versus sport debate in this whole thing. Pettis is a former champion. Pettis is a crazy dynamic striker, but he's fallen on some tough times. He lost 3 fights in a row, dropped the weight class, had a tough fight with Charles Oliveira in his debut at 145. And the fact of the matter is he had a rough weight cut. This is not the weight class he should be fighting at. He's going to be sucked out. He's going to be in the cage tomorrow with a young, hungry, healthy, and ready Max Holloway, who's riding a huge momentum wave. This, to me, is a fun fight, but a terrible fight for Anthony Pettis. Pettis doesn't win this fight in any way tomorrow. He's going to have a very, very rough time against Max Holloway. Holloway is going to open a lot of eyes tomorrow with 10 straight wins, and he's going to be the new, quote-unquote, interim champion. The interim champion is Jose Aldo. The real champion is Conor McGregor. Let's straighten that out. But I got Max Holloway tomorrow.
For a while, Pettis, you know, especially during his championship reign, Pettis kind of seemed like the next big thing. But, you know, in losing 3 straight, I think people kind of figured him out. You know, his footwork isn't the best. His defense isn't the best. He sort of is Woodley-esque the way he throws out a ton of feints and just waits on the perfect shot. And dude, when he landed, I mean, that body kick he landed versus Bendo was fucking money. That Showtime kick he landed in the other fight against Bendo was fucking money. The guy throws with power, and he, you know, he could catch Max with some shit. Max is almost the opposite, though. The footwork is, you know, he makes it look easy. The footwork is on point. His head movement is amazing. And I think the key X factor here, he is a longer fighter. And he is very, very good at utilizing his reach and keeping the fight at a range that's perfect for him. I think that's going to really frustrate a guy like Pettis, who likes to wait on that shot, because that shot is rarely going to make itself apparent when Max is controlling the range and keeping himself the perfect distance away. For that reason, I'm also going Max Holloway here. And I believe that wraps it up. Ross, you were a mensch for joining us. Shout outs, any Twitter? You of course can follow him on Twitter at Ross Finkelstein, E before the L.
You can follow me on Twitter at Ross Finkelstein, E before the L. And if you go L. If you go to at Ross Finkelstein, E before the L right now, you will find a great plethora of nothing. And that's because I've been kind of under the radar for the last year. If you read my Twitter, you can read up and see why I've been under the radar and some reasons that I won't go into and make this podcast all sad. But in about a month, my quietness will soon turn to annoyingness and loudness, and the new things that I've been working on, the new Ross Finkelstein, E before the L, will be debuting. So look out for that.
The man's a talented artist. Chael even gave him a retweet. Keep your eyes on my boy, the young talent, the young gun, like Jordan Meehan and Ross Finkelstein. Thank you so much for listening. As always, the love that I get compared to the hate is surprisingly high. Y'all are awesome. Enjoy UFC 206. Enjoy this cold weather as a cold front blows across the country. And we'll see you next week to break down UFC 206. Until then, we gone.
Jake, tune into the MMA podcast every Tuesday night.
God, yo.
Dr. Wow style, always been a foul child.
Will I, sucker? I'll be the coming yeah. Like Noah.
The MMA podcast, Jake is the host. And since Ramsey's been in a wheelchair, the Aunt Jimmy show has been on the road. I wanna say John Jones is a hoe, so I think that I'll pick up the phone and dial 213-457-3380. We got hot takes on the stove. You get blood on your clothes if you're sitting in the front row. I throw on my gi and then I lace the boots. I'll have Gal lying down cause he ain't the truth. And if Alan wasn't a cop, I'd make you. Shout out to Ross Finkelstein, the Jew. Cause according to you, you're an MMA guru. A Rube Bisping lost his hands, Count Dooku. If you're a fancy boy, you get a 2-minute slot. Mystery wants a title shot. So listen to the MMA podcast. Throw a high kick, but I block that. Call me Diaz, screaming George, where you at? I want the strap. But you know that I'll never tap. So listen to the MMA podcast. Throw a high kick, but I block that. Call me Diaz, screaming George, where you at? I want the strap. And you know that I won't tap. Mystery. The MMA podcast. Most of us just live and breathe this fighting shit.
Shut up, Jake. Shut up, Jake.